50% chance of rain. I know it was sprinkling early this morning over in Bemidji here. Highs 35 to 40. South winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And tonight, the chance of rain continues. Cloudy, lows in the upper 30s. Tomorrow, Thursday, cloudy, then gradually becoming sunny. Highs 37 to 45. West, northwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And overnight, lows in the 20s. Friday, going to see the sun again. Highs near 40. Winds out of the west. Our KAXC question of the week is, our new Season Watch pod explores nature as the seasons change. How do you change when the fall turns into winter? You can text us your answer at 218-326-1234.
And don't forget, later in the show, we have a two-part Area Voices, my conversation with Kent Esty. The first part will air this morning around 8:10, and then the second part's going to air around 8:45. I think it's a very fascinating conversation of what it takes to be an artist in today's world, where social media seems to be the only way to really get your name out there.
I'm excited to hear it.
All right, now it's time for the Up North Report from our KAXC KBXC news team.
For KAXC News, I'm Megan Buffington with a special edition of the Up North Report. 3 years ago, thousands gathered in Chisholm to see the wall that heals. The United Way of Northeastern Minnesota's United for Veterans Committee brought the traveling replica of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial to the area.
I think it was not only informative, it was very therapeutic.
Steve Potts has taught history for over 40 years. He's currently an instructor at Minnesota North College Hibbing and is on the committee. When the wall visited, many veterans shared their stories for the first time. That sparked the creation of Operation Service Story. The Oral History Project is a partnership between United Way and the St. Louis County Historical Society. The aim is to gather stories of veterans and service members from the Iron Range and Kuching and Lake of the Woods counties. When the effort first launched last year, it was called Operation Soldier Story. Soldier was changed to Service to include all facets of service, including nurses and non-combat veterans. Potts has an extensive background in oral history, including interviewing Holocaust survivors. He's talked with three veterans for this project.
I wish we had more vets who are willing to be interviewed, but, you know, it's difficult for a lot of people to talk about what went on there.
His father served in World War II, and he could never get him to talk much about his service. Chad Boos had a similar experience with his grandfather.
I never knew about his experiences, where he went, or I didn't know very much, and now he's passed.
Boos is the United Way of Northeastern Minnesota's board chair. He served in the Air Force from 1999 to 2003 and was deployed with the 101st Airborne Division for the invasion of Iraq.
I want my kids to be able to learn about my story. It was one day when I'm not here to tell them or their kids, my grandkids, or et cetera, you know.
Boos talked for 2 hours with one of the trained interviewers, who was also a veteran.
At the end of that 2 hours, it was I had a new friend, a new brother in arms.
He says the conversation was a 50,000-foot view, but covered his whole experience in the service.
We talked about some of my motivation for going into the service. We talked a little bit about basic training, going through advanced training, my first duty assignment, and then different exercises.
They discussed his time wrestling with the All-Air Force team before 9/11 and parts of his deployment.
Getting into some details and some stuff we kept at a pretty high level.
Potts says veterans who participate in Operation Service Story get to decide the parameters, including what they talk about, how long they talk, and even who they talk to.
They can make it only available to family. They can make it so it's not available until they've passed away. They can donate it. They can record it and keep a copy for themselves. We do a full transcript, written transcript, type transcript of each of the interviews. You know, we're very accommodating, and that's kind of the best thing to do with oral history interviews. But it's a chance for people to record things before those memories are lost.
Boos's message to veterans who might be hesitant to share their story is that if you don't, it ends with you.
No one else can learn from it, can empathize from it, can hear about it. People in the military, and veterans especially, you don't want to speak up. You don't want to stand out. You want to remain humble. But our men and women in the armed forces do some absolutely incredible things and have incredible experiences. And it's worth sharing with other people. Let them know your story, I guess, is my pitch.
Service members from the Iron Range and Kuchiching and Lake of the Woods counties can visit unitednemn.org to sign up for Operation Service Story. There you can also find additional services from United Way, including a veterans resource guide and information on the annual veterans retreat. That's it for this special edition of the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River, dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
You are listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle. Coming up next, we're going to hear more from Morning Edition, talking about President Trump with the Prince Mohammed bin Salman visit and the Saudi response. That'll be coming up in just a bit.
We receive support from the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative, offering the community exhibits, workshops, and many events. More at bagleyarts.org.
And support for KAXE comes from the Third Coast Chamber Collective, presenting chamber music up north, featuring an internationally renowned accordion and violin ensemble from Poland at Co House on November 20th at 7 p.m. Tickets available at thirdcoastchambercollective.com.
There's some live music coming up in the listening area tonight. Morning Bird Trio will be at Smoke on the Water in Coleraine. That starts at 5 p.m. Tomorrow night, Rangers, which is a super interesting new group featuring Keith Cicola, Rich Madsen, Jermaine Gemberling, and more, will be at Chair in Virginia at 7 p.m. We just got their new record in. And Salty Dog will be at the Green Scene Market and Eatery down in Walker. That starts at 8 o'clock tonight.
And Give to the Max Day is tomorrow. It's Minnesota's statewide giving celebration. Every contribution fuels nonprofits across our region. Whether you care about arts and culture, food shelves, community health, public media, or outdoor access, your donation makes a difference. Go to givemn.org and find a cause close to home. Now we're going to hear more from Morning Edition.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Me Martinez in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Leila Fadel in Washington, D.C. Good morning. In a moment, we'll hear how a loose wire led to a cargo ship crashing into Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge last year, killing six people. But first,
sitting beside Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in the Oval Office yesterday, President Trump dismissed a question about the 2018 killing of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
You don't have to embarrass our guest by asking a question like that.
It was just yes, Mr. President.
U.S. intelligence found that the Saudi Crown Prince approved the operation that led to Khashoggi's dismemberment and killing. He denies any personal involvement. The exchange highlights a tension with Saudi Arabia, an important ally in the Middle East that stretches beyond the current administration.
Here to discuss the visit is NPR White House correspondent Danielle Kurtzleben. Danielle, that was quite the exchange.
It really was. And to explain it, it started during an Oval Office meeting when a journalist asked the Crown Prince about Khashoggi and also about 9/11. The journalist noted that there are families of 9/11 victims who were angry that the prince was visiting, as some believe the Saudi government was involved in the 9/11 attacks. So the journalist asked why Americans should trust the Crown Prince. Trump jumped in and responded, saying Salman has done a, quote, phenomenal job. Then he turned to the topic of Khashoggi, who is a Saudi journalist who was critical of the Saudi government.
You're mentioning somebody that was extremely controversial. A lot of people didn't like that gentleman that you're talking about. Whether you like him or didn't like him, things happen. But he knew nothing about it, and we can leave it at that.
But then the Crown Prince said that, no, he would respond as well, and he had this to say.
We've did all the right steps of investigation, etc., in Saudi Arabia, and we've improved our system to be sure that nothing happened like that, and it's painful, and it's a huge mistake, and we are doing our best that this doesn't happen again.
It's really notable the two different tones there, the Crown Prince acting regretful about the killing, while Trump not only didn't condemn the death, but got defensive. One more thing we should add is Khashoggi's widow has criticized Trump's comments, saying, quote, there is no justification to murder my husband.
other than that tense moment, it sounded like this visit was really about cooperation between the two countries.
Very much. And we learned last night that Saudi Arabia and the U.S. signed a whole string of agreements. Just to tick through a few, they agreed to cooperate on creating nuclear energy, to work together on AI. There was a defense agreement, which the White House said would make it easier for U.S. defense firms to operate in Saudi Arabia. The U.S. agreed to sell the Saudis F-35 fighter jets. And the White House announced Saudi Arabia is pledging to invest $1 trillion in the U.S. Now, that's a lot of stuff that they say they signed. But also, there just haven't been a lot of details on those things yet. We're still waiting on the text of some of those agreements, for example. But there was one more big development. Last night at a black tie dinner, Trump announced that Saudi Arabia is now a major non-NATO ally. The U.S. confers that particular designation on select countries. It gives those countries special defense and financial relationships with the U.S. For example, their firms can bid on some defense contracts and they can cooperate on research.
I know the president also has hopes of getting Saudi Arabia to sign on to the Abraham Accords. Any progress on that?
Well, it did come up in that Oval Office meeting. The Crown Prince said that he wants to sign on, but he also wants a two-state solution to the conflict in Gaza. Well, the leader of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, has said there will never be a Palestinian state. So that's a fundamental roadblock.
All right, one more day on the visit. What's on the schedule?
Well, today there's a Saudi-U.S. investment forum at the Kennedy Center, and it's set to feature executives from some major companies like Chevron, Pfizer, and NVIDIA. And it's possible that we'll learn more about some of these potential investments then.
That's White House correspondent Danielle Kurtzleben. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Let's discuss the Crown Prince's visit now from the perspective of Saudi Arabia. For that, we're joined by Fahad Nazar, the spokesperson for the Saudi Embassy here in Washington, D.C. Good morning, and thank you for being on the program.
Good morning, Layla.
So I want to start with something Jamal Khashoggi's widow is saying, reacting to the comments in the Oval Office yesterday, including the Crown Prince saying it was painful and a huge mistake. She's asking that the Crown Prince meet with her to apologize and to provide compensation for her husband's killing. Is that something he would do?
So we have addressed the murder of Jamal Khashoggi on multiple occasions.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that this was a heinous crime. It was an egregious violation not only of our laws, but our values. The people behind it were prosecuted and held accountable.
But will the Crown Prince meet with his widow?
Well, if you can just let me finish, please. We also, as His Royal Highness yesterday also made very clear, we took concrete measures to make sure that nothing like this ever happens again. What is also worth noting is the fact that throughout our history, not only did, you know, we've never had anything like this happen before, it is simply not who we are. It is not how we do things. It is not how we resolve our differences. And really, I think in some ways, I think it's very unfortunate for people who are trying to define Saudi Arabia as a nation and as a people by this one dark chapter in our history.
Mm-hmm. And will the Crown Prince meet with his widow?
The Crown Prince has an incredibly full, busy schedule, so I don't think that's even possible, just given how busy he is.
Another thing to come out of the meeting was a promise of $1 trillion that Saudi Arabia will invest in the United States. What does the Crown Prince see as the possible return on that investment?
Right. So just to, you know, kind of widen the lens here a little bit. So I believe that the Crown Prince's visit really does mark a new chapter in a longstanding relationship. This is a relationship that goes back 80 years. It is in many ways multidimensional, and it does include political cooperation on a number of fronts, security and military cooperation. The economic cooperation and trade has always been a pillar of the relationship, but there's also been cultural and academic exchanges. So all of these aspects of the relationship were highlighted during the visit. So as your colleague said at the outset, we did sign a strategic defense agreement that really, I think, shows our commitment to enhancing regional security. We signed an agreement on artificial intelligence because Saudi Arabia is slowly but surely becoming a hub for artificial intelligence in the Middle East and beyond. We signed an agreement on the peaceful uses of nuclear energy. So again, all of this really highlights not just that the breadth of the relationship, but it's a relationship that is ever evolving.
Now that you've been designated as a major non-NATO ally of the United States, what specific guarantees, security guarantees, is Saudi Arabia expecting? For example, are you looking for a similar defense pact to what the U.S. recently signed with Qatar, the executive order on Qatar, after Israel attacked during Gaza negotiations?
Right. So the United States has been our main strategic partner when it comes to issues of defense and security for decades. Obviously, as you know very well, unfortunately, we do live in a dangerous neighborhood, and we really have no higher priority than making sure that our people are safe and our borders are secure. And again, we've worked on the United States on this for decades, and you know, it is our primary security partner. And the relationship has continued on that front. So we're going to continue to have this conversation to make sure that we meet these goals of making sure that our people are safe and secure.
When you say we live in a bad neighborhood, I mean, what do you see as the biggest regional threat to Saudi Arabia that would that this might protect against?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think we believe that we are part of an increasingly interconnected global community. A lot of the security threats and the challenges that Saudi Arabia faces, I think we, and by we I mean the broader international community, faces. Mm-hmm. So whether in the region, for sure, we still, you know, face security threats from non-state actors. And, you know, then modern warfare has also been changing and evolving. So we want to make sure that, again, we're working very closely with the United States. We're working closely with our regional partners to make sure that we are safe and secure. And this is something that has been going on for decades, really.
And really quickly, on the Abraham Accords, is a commitment to that possible when the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, says he does not want a Palestinian state?
Well, Saudi Arabia's position on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict has been very clear. We have long maintained that for the broader Middle East to enjoy any semblance of peace and prosperity, we need this core dispute resolved once and for all. We believe that the only way forward is a two-state solution. This is what we put on the table, you know, all the way back in 2002 with the Arab Peace Initiative. Mm-hmm. That offer is still on the table.
Fahad Nasr is the spokesperson for the Saudi Arabian Embassy here in Washington, D.C. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Layla.
A loose wire is to blame for the crash of a cargo ship in March of 2024 that killed six people and destroyed Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge. National Transportation Safety Board investigators revealed that in testimony yesterday. And as Scott Massioni of member station WYPR reports, investigators say the incident was preventable.
The NTSB's final report says a wire pulling loose over time from the cargo ship Dali's breaker caused two blackouts on the ship. That eventually resulted in a loss of propulsion and steering, said Jennifer Hamady, chairwoman of the board who oversaw the investigation.
This tragedy should have never occurred. Lives should have never been lost. As with all accidents that we investigate, this was preventable.
Six construction workers filling potholes on the bridge were killed when it collapsed. The state of Maryland estimates that rebuilding the structure could cost as much as $5.2 billion. That's more than twice the initial estimate. Investigators concluded that the reason the wire came loose is that a label was affixed to the wire too close to where it was plugged into the breaker. The label prevented the wire from fully inserting into the breaker because the casing pushed against the label. Hamady said figuring out the culprit for the blackout was an astonishing feat.
The dolly is almost 1,000 feet, and it's as long as the Eiffel Tower is high, with miles of wiring and thousands of electrical connections. Locating a single wire that is loose among thousands of wires is like looking for a loose bolt in the Eiffel Tower.
NTSB recommendations to prevent similar incidents in the future include asking owners of 68 vulnerable bridges in 19 states to conduct safety assessments. Grace Ocean Private, the owner of the Dali, is suing Hyundai Heavy Industries, which built the vessel, for negligence. The state of Maryland and the city of Baltimore are suing the ship owner and management company for damages. Work to replace the Key Bridge has begun. Maryland officials say it should be completed in 2030 and will be funded by the federal government. For NPR News, I'm Scott Massioni in Baltimore.
This is NPR News.
You are tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with DJ Ding. And we got a text from the text line, Mary from Cass Lake. Morning, Andrew. Morning, Ding. Good morning, Mary.
Morning, Mary.
And yeah, so we're coming up in a bit. We're going to play from the vault where DJ Ding diligently went into the vault to look for records. He scoured through the collection, as they say.
All thousands.
Thousands.
In like 8 minutes.
You went through,
went
every
through the whole
one
thing.
Of them.
Yeah, from A to Z.
What was your favorite album cover you came across?
There's some old folk ones that are pretty funny.
Was it Quicksilver Messenger?
No,
oh,
I can't
what's
even.
What's that band's name?
I can't even remember the name of the groups, but some of the folk ones are just like, they must have thought it was a really good idea at the time, but you look at it now and you just laugh.
My favorite ones back there is like, it's, there's some where it's just like a band from the 80s and it just seems like a group of guys because they're just wearing like shirts and jeans kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it just like, okay, they got to be good.
You think?
It's like one of the, there's this meme that goes on like online, like, if your hardcore band looks like this, you're going to die in that pit tonight kind of thing. So if they're dressed like that, they got to be good.
That's true. I mean, some of the best hardcore or punk bands didn't look anything like punk rockers or, you know, like, this is true. But
so we were looking at things that happened on this day in music. And this one, I'm curious what your thoughts were, because I can see this having like not an impact isn't the right word. That's too strong of a word. But like, was this even on your radar when it was happening at the time? So on this day in 1990, Milli Vanilli was stripped of their Grammy Award because it turns out they didn't actually sing the songs. Was this on your radar when it happened in 1990?
Probably. But I don't think anybody was really surprised. I think most people, especially those of us that don't really care for pop music, it was like,
they're all doing that.
Yeah, and like, who else? You know, the whole like studio confection or studio, you know, they only exist in the studio. They're not really a live performing thing.
Well, it happened.
It's very
with,
suspicious.
The other time I remember
their sound cut out or
something like that was that song, like, Good Vibrations.
Oh, my
Marky
goodness.
Mark song.
Yeah.
That lady, she was from the band that sang It's Raining Men.
Oh, yeah.
But then they used a model in the music video.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Voice. Yeah. Was that Martha Wash? Was that her name?
I can't remember.
So she was a full-bodied woman, you would say, a big bone woman. And yeah, they used a skinny model in the video, and it wasn't her at all. But no, Milli Vanilli, are you kidding me? I mean, I think in retrospect, probably it's kind of sad some of the vitriol they got.
Yeah.
But they were faking the funk, man. Like, big time. What do you expect?
I'm confused why, like, so shouldn't the Grammy go to the two people that actually sang the song then? Because the song is still good. Or it was enough to win
a Grammy. That's a matter of opinion. Well, just because it won a Grammy doesn't mean it's good, in my opinion.
Every time I hear about the song Girl, You Know It's True, I think of when they got busted, because it was just, Girl, You Know It, Girl, You Know It, Girl, You Know.
You're talking about Bismarcky?
So Milli Vanilli, your thumbs down on that?
Surprise. What about you, Andrew?
I like that song, and I like it. Blame It on the Rain, I think is what it's called.
Okay.
I think those are catchy songs.
Okay. I mean, anything that's played 1,000 times over and over all day long is a catchy, you know, will get in your brain. Doesn't mean it's good. I'll stand by that.
There's something to say about a hook that sticks in your brain.
Right. But you understand my point. It's about the repetition of it. Like, at a certain point, you don't have a choice anymore. It's been drilled into your head.
I guess I don't necessarily subscribe to that line of thinking, but I can see your point.
We can agree to disagree.
All right. So also on this day in 1982, Led Zeppelin released their final studio album, Coda. Now, I think you're on record saying that you're not a fan of Led Zeppelin.
But just more out of a, like, oppositional thumb my nose at what everybody else likes kind of way, not in a real, like, musically critiquing kind of way.
So, okay, let me throw this at you, because I think I was too young when the critical backlash happened against Led Zeppelin, because I feel like they were a super popular band in the 70s, and then I think in the 80s there was kind of a flip of like they were not cool because they were such a popular band and were kind of like the epitome of a certain type of 70s band.
Yeah, very much so. They symbolize the sort of excess of 70s rock and roll, you know, drugs, alcohol, groupies, 8 hour long guitar solos, you know, things like that.
And then I feel like in the late 90s, early 2000s, it switched back again to they became like, oh, it's cool to like Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, I think that's legit. I don't remember what they did in the 80s recording wise.
Well, they stopped because after John Bonham died in 1980.
Yeah.
And then Robert Plant did his solo stuff.
Yeah.
The one guy joined them Crooked Vultures? Is it John Paul Jones?
The one guy.
Oh. What is his name?
Yeah, John Paul Jones.
Okay, yeah. But
I don't know what you're trying to get out of me here, but yeah.
Yeah, Led Zeppelin. Where do you stand on them?
Everybody seems to love them. I don't have any of their music in my house.
Not a single record. Wow.
Fight me.
What about Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers?
Yeah.
They played You Don't Know How It Feels and Honey Bee on Saturday Night Live in 1994 with Dave Grohl.
Again, I don't have any of their records, but respect their sound. And I saw them live. They're really good live.
Oh, when was that?
Good rock and roll band. I saw them at Alpine Valley, where I also saw The Police. And
in the same show?
And The English Beat. And I saw The Grateful Dead there.
Oh, wow.
I had to go because I was...
Now, you're definitely on record, not as a Grateful Dead.
No, I was friends with someone that was an ardent Deadhead at the time, and they're like, you have to go. You can't just not like them without seeing them live. And I was like, fine. And I went, and I even liked them, disliked them more.
You turned to your
more.
Friend, and you're like, that's it? All right?
I can
go?
Yeah. Do I have to dance around like a skeleton now? Okay, I did that. I'm done.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but I saw Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers at Alpine Valley in Wisconsin, outdoor live show, really, really good rock and roll band.
Nice. So you said you had an ELO thing on this day.
I don't know if I should read it. It's pretty gruesome, but okay, you forced my hand. Now I got to read it. Two farmers were found on this day in 2012. Two farmers were found not guilty of health and safety offenses after a giant hay bale crushed former ELO cellist Mike Edwards to death. He was killed instantly when the 600-kilogram hay bale rolled down a field and landed on his van near Totnes in Devon in September 2010. An injury request. Yeah, then there was an investigation and ended up being deemed an accidental death, but the thing crushed his van and he was in the van?
Yikes.
I'll never look at hay bales the same way again.
All right.
So, yeah, what about you? Will you look at a hay bale now and not think ELO?
I think I'll be fine not thinking about ELO when I see hay bales. So, what about Frank Sinatra? This was his 80th birthday tribute, happened on this day in 1995. Famously, Sinead O'Connor got booed. Oh, wait, no, that was Bob Dylan's birthday. Never mind.
What?
Disregard that. But Frank Sinatra, where do you stand with him?
I think he did
He dissed Sinead O'Connor because
after
of the
Pope
Bob Dylan thing. Oh, yeah.
No,
yeah,
the
yeah.
Pope thing.
Pope thing.
The photo on Saturday Night Live. You know, my mom loves him.
You don't care for any of those crooners,
I'll just
huh?
leave it there. I remember reading a review of a record of his that, like, music heads were saying, yeah, I know this Frank Sinatra, blah, blah, blah. But this is the one Frank Sinatra record that, like, super deep into music people would get into. And I can't remember the name of the record, and I don't know what it is. So I was curious to hear what that record is, what it sounds like, why it might be different than his other stuff. But no, I was just in Chicago 2 weeks ago, and as we were driving through Chicago, we passed State Street, and the first thing that popped in my mind is Frank Sinatra singing about Chicago and State Street, that great street. Mm. So I'm just sticking to positive here now. You got me on Led Zeppelin. I said what I said, but now I'm just...
Okay, this one, I have no idea what your reaction to this artist is. Mm. So on this day, Frank Zappa released his one and only rock opera, Joe's Garage. Where are you on the Frank Zappa...
Well, with
fandom.
All due respect to our amazing on-air volunteer, Alyssa Ellen, who's a huge Frank Zappa fan, for me, it was too much guitar solos, just kind of constantly guitar solos, mm-hmm. and that just gets annoying. Like, I can't hang with that. And he was really good friends with Captain Beefheart, and I'll take Captain Beefheart any day of the week. Any day of the week.
See, I couldn't tell you a single Captain Beefheart song.
Well, you better brush up on your beefheartism. I love you, big dummy. That's a good place to start.
All right. Nope.
So what do you think? No, you tell me. What do you think of Frank Zappa?
Here's my problem with Frank Zappa. This one guy I found very annoying in college was really into them, and it ruined Frank Zappa for me.
Yeah. I could. Well, yeah, and I think Frank Zappa is kind of really annoying.
So, speaking of not annoying, you picked something from the vault here. What do we got here going on?
Well, what artist can you think of whose name is not only famous, but also kind of a whole style or a whole rhythm is also their name.
Well,
you know, like there's not a Mick Jagger rhythm. There's not a Jimmy Page rhythm. There's not a Keith Moon rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
So can you think of anybody else?
I can think of because I know who you picked.
There's only one.
Bo Diddley.
The legendary Bo Diddley, and we're going to hear the song, the story of Bo Diddley, where he tells his own story. It's fantastic.
I was born one night about 12 o'clock. I come in this world playing a gold guitar. Walk around sticking out his chest. Oh, the mama, this boy, he gonna be a mess. Yeah. Oh. Uh-huh. Now people came from miles around and just to hear my little guitar sound. On practice, I'd be famous one day. Woo, I'm a man. I'm a killer dealer. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Early in the middle of the night, a car drove up with four headlights. He says, sign this line and I can make you a star. I said, well, what's in it, man? What's in it for me? He says, I play your guitar, son, and wait and see. Here I am. The girls like me. They say it's crazy. Some people I never seen before. It was good too. They like it. Sound nice. Yeah. Yeah, man. I'm a killer dealer.
That was the story of the mighty Bo Diddley by the man himself, Bo Diddley, who has his own rhythm named after him. Like, what a force. Can you imagine? He's the only one we could come up with. You and I are deep into the music, and we can't think of another musician.
Yeah, the only other beat I can think of, but it wasn't, I don't know if it's named after the guy, the one that's used in Be My Baby, the doom, doom, doom.
Well, isn't that a Phil Spector thing?
It's not a Phil Spector thing. It's the drummer who came up with it because he accidentally... missed the beat, so he was like picking up his drumstick because he dropped it, and he was like, and he was like a little late, and that's where the beat came from.
I know drummers that are famous for their rhythms, but you don't know their names. Like James Brown's drummer is famous for his drum sound and his rhythm. But anyways, Bo Diddley right there, you heard it. Love it.
Speaking of famous people, you got a text on the text line. Really? You don't like Led Zeppelin?
It's okay. So the background is, like most of us, I grew up on, or I should say most of us of an age, I'm over 60, grew up listening to 70s mainstream radio, and those songs were just played ad nauseum. And once I heard different kinds of music outside of what was played on album-oriented rock stations, I fell deeply in love with music and rejected all the stuff that I'd been hearing, whether it was good or bad. Like, I went through a phase where I didn't like The Who. I've come back around on them because they're genius.
I've got something controversial.
They're genius. Love The Who.
I do not.
But
like
Led Zeppelin, I never came back around on them, and so many other bands of that era. Like, just, I didn't have time for them anymore. There's cooler, less heralded things that are equally as amazing in my book that I want to know about.
And then we also heard from Mike in Brainerd. Frank Sinatra live at the Sands with the Count Basie Band is probably the album you're digging for. His performance with Basie pulls him from crooner to a legit jazzer for one night caught on vinyl.
Ooh. Who's that? That was someone from Brainerd?
Mike from Brainerd.
Mike, thanks for the tip. I'll have to look that out. As soon as I heard Count Basie Band mentioned, that, yeah, piqued my interest for sure.
Here we go. Support comes from AW Research Laboratories in Brainerd, reminding private well owners to test their drinking water annually. Common well contaminants such as bacteria, nitrates, and arsenic are odorless, tasteless, and colorless. More information and test kits available at awlab.com.
And support for KAXE comes from the Grassroots Concert Series, presenting the Weary Ramblers on Friday, November 21st at 7 p.m. at the Livewell Nightclub and Coffee Bar, located at the Journey Church in Nisswa. Doors open at 6:30. The full fall lineup can be found at grassrootsconcerts.org.
And now it's time for Best Wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary on this date, November 19th.
We'd like to wish happy 48th anniversary to Terry and Margaret Madison of Spring Lake. Rob Bassey, it's your birthday today. Rob's from Mountain Iron. Happy birthday to Lucy Gorman, who turns 70 today, and she lives in Chesapeake, Virginia. And a big happy birthday to Martin Hayes as well.
And now we're going to play a tune for the birthday and anniversary people. This is the Olympians with the song California.
Dig that tune.
Yeah, that was the Olympians with the song California from their new album In Search of a Revival. If you have a birthday or anniversary to share, text us at 218-326-1234. And speaking of the text line, we heard from Mary from Cass Lake. As we were talking about Frank Zappa, Mary recommended Billy the Mountain, Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention.
Cool. I'll check it out. Thank you, Mary.
So, coming up in a bit, we're going to hear more from Morning Edition. Today's, it's about denim and pop music, which I'm very, a new exhibition at Levi's San Francisco headquarters highlights how jeans can offer surprising insights into the lives and legacies of musicians who wear them. So that'll be coming up in just a bit. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with DJ Dang. And we received support from the First State Bank of Big Fork, with branches in Big Fork and Kellyer, offering tools for managing money on any mobile device. Hometown banking at its best since 1912. FSBBigFork.com. Member FDIC.
And support comes from Paul Bunyan Communications, powered by the GigaZone, offering fiber optic fast internet speeds up to 10 gig and GigaZone Wi-Fi to support devices wirelessly. Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative.
Now we're going to hear more from Morning Edition.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Faldin.
And I'm Mae Martinez. Pop music is full of jeans talk.
Blue jean, baby. L.A. lady.
Blue jeans, white shirt. Walked into the room, you know you made my eyes burn.
She had them apple bottom jeans.
But musicians such as Elton John, Lana Del Rey, and Flo Rida don't just sing about jeans, they also live in them. NPR's Chloe Veltman headed to a new exhibition in San Francisco to learn more about artists' deep relationship with denim.
A Levi's YouTube video shows how a pair of raggedy old Levi's 501s set the Guinness record for the world's most expensive jeans.
I have $325,000.
When they went for more than $400,000 at a 2023 auction in Nashville.
I was bidding on it.
Tracy Panic is Levi's in-house historian and archivist.
Going once, going twice. Sold!
But sadly, one of my rivals got it.
The reason for the extravagant bidding war? Kurt Cobain. The late Nirvana frontman owned these pants in the 1990s. They are now on loan from the private collector who beat Panic for them at auction as part of an exhibition of pop star denim at Levi's San Francisco headquarters. Panic points out some of the details.
The bottom hem of the pants have a colorful psychedelic print. Even the backside has some patching.
They're stained and ripped all over.
And they're just a signature grunge looking pair of jeans.
Because they are so well worn, Cobain's jeans reveal fascinating details about the wearer. Like, while the artist was famously a left-handed guitarist, Panic says upside-down faded lettering scrawled on a patch on the right leg.
A four-letter word starting with F
suggests Cobain was actually ambidextrous.
You can tell he was writing with his right hand while he was seated.
Other denim pieces on display tell contrasting stories about the artists who wore them.
I see a little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango?
The sharp creases in a pair of slim-fitting light blue jeans once owned by Freddie Mercury say something about the Queen vocalist's fastidiousness.
I think he ironed these at some point.
Meanwhile, Panic says the rhinestone-festooned Western-style denim pants and matching jacket worn by Beyoncé in a recent Levi's ad campaign highlight how Queen Bee upends traditional white male tropes.
She challenges a pool shark to a shootout. Of course, she wins hands down and demands that her rival give up his Levi's.
There's a way in which you can see denim being kind of almost a blank canvas for anything that anybody wants to make it.
This is Yale University fashion historian and musicologist Mary Davis. She says jeans and pop music can be particularly potent when they come together.
Born in the USA, I was
Davis points to Bruce Springsteen's 1984 album, Born in the USA, with its songs about the struggles of the working class and its memorable album cover.
Bruce Springsteen wearing iconic jeans, he's making a statement there.
That rear-view shot of the artist slouching in a white T-shirt and worn blue Levi's with a red baseball cap hanging out of a pocket draws a line between denim's 19th century workwear roots and the troubadour of late 20th century labour. Chloe Veltman, NPR News.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm A. Martinez.
And I'm Leila Fadel.
And that is Morning Edition here on the Wednesday Morning Show. And DJ Deng has a complaint about that story.
Well, what about the Ramones? I mean, every album cover, they were, to me, the first wearers of skinny jeans, even though they weren't skinny jeans. They're just whatever jeans, all torn in the knees. Every album cover, they're rocking that. Every kid that loved the Ramones wanted to dress like that.
Did you?
Yeah, eventually. Shout out to Jim Gallagher, who texted in about me being a musical contrarian. Andrew sets me up for this every time, and I walk right through that door so willingly.
Hey, you were positive on Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Yeah, I got. Yeah, I'm positive about a lot of things. But
and then you somehow turn it into a negative thing about Grateful Dead.
Just that I saw them live in the same place. What do you mean somehow?
Yeah.
Well, it all related.
Like,
it all related.
It was
there
like
was a
four
thread.
Steps away.
There was a thread.
Programming on KXE, KBXE is supported in part by the Bush Foundation, proud to partner with the St. Paul and Minnesota Foundation to celebrate the honorees of the 2025 Bush Prize Minnesota, Foster Advocates, and Dakota Wekohan. More information online at spmfc.org. And coming up at 8:10, it's going to be Area Voices, part one of my conversation with Kent Esty. And then the second part will be coming up at 8:45 this morning. And in just a bit, we're going to be hearing from the album of the week. But first, we got our question of the week. Our new season watch pod explores natures as the seasons change. How do you change when fall turns to winter? You can text us at 218-326-1234. Deng, I'm going to pose this question to you. How do you change when fall turns into winter?
I think a big part of the fall-winter switchover for me is kind of putting my garden to bed. Mm-hmm. So it's making sure, like I just probably 2 weeks ago got the last of the carrots out of the ground. And then, you know, the vines from the squash plants and all the plants that have died, getting them out of the ground and putting them in the compost pile. And then I usually cover most of my garden with a thin layer of hay just to kind of protect the soil through the winter and then take it off in the spring. But yeah, that's always a, for me, a sign of like, okay, growing season is for sure over. Another thing is beginning of sauna season. So I sauna'd on Sunday night. It's beautiful. And I know some people sauna all year round, but for me, we don't have cold water to jump into. And so if it's not cold outside, like, I don't, where's the cool down part? How do you do the cool down part? But you got to sit outside in 80 degree temps for like 2 hours before you cool down, then go back in the sauna. That don't work.
Have you started pulling out the winter coats?
Yeah. Yeah, those have been out for a while, especially because the end of soccer season can be so up and down weather-wise.
Yeah,
it can
outside,
be 40 degrees and raining one night and 75 degrees the next day. So, yep, we got the winter coats out. But, yeah, a big part of it for me is taking care of the garden, the last bits of harvest and prepping it for next year and getting it all kind of cleaned up and ready to go for next year.
For me, the biggest change is my fashion in terms of people don't get to see my band shirts.
You don't have any band hoodies.
I don't have very many band hoodies. I have three, maybe.
They're expensive. When we went,
they are expensive.
We went and saw Little Sims in Chicago last week, and her T-shirts were $50.
It's ridiculous.
The hoodies were $100.
How much concert tees are now? It's ridiculous.
And I like love Little Sims to the end of the earth, but wow,
T-shirt shouldn't be more than $20.
Yeah. That probably doesn't cost more than $5 to make, probably less than that, probably $2.
Yeah, and I'm spending $30 out there.
Yeah.
And then you're telling me $50 for a T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do it.
I mean, it's a huge, I have a friend who's a professional musician and is in a big touring band, and they make more off of merch than they do off of their fees for a concert.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's a big, 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 big thing for a lot of the artists, is that's part and parcel of their wages, you know.
So I'm very famous for buying lots of concert tees.
I don't know anyone more famous than you.
When was the last time you bought a concert tee, and who was it?
Oh, bought one. I made my friend in the band I just mentioned, Godspeed You Black Emperor, give me one. I'm like, I'm not going to buy your band's t-shirt, bro. I've known you since you were in 50 Cent Cheeseburger.
You won't support his art.
I've traveled all over the Midwest to see him play. Yes, I support his art big time. So yeah, wow, a band t-shirt that I would have paid money for. Can't think of it. Can't think of it. Can't a bunch of my friends just saw a year ago, saw Kneecap, the Irish rap group, Rabble Rouser crew, and they bought a bunch of merch. And I got a t-shirt, a Kneecap t-shirt that my friend bought for me. That's the closest.
Do you remember the first band t-shirt you bought?
Probably the Clash.
The Clash?
When I saw them.
Do you remember what it looked like?
It was like the color of military fatigues. And then it had the symbol from the Combat Rock album of like a book that was open and I think a gun over the book.
Oh, I don't remember that on Combat
Rock. Yeah, I'll pull the album out and show it to you. But and then it said The Clash, and on the back it had the tour dates.
Oh, nice.
That had to be the first one.
Do you still have the shirt?
No.
Oh, bummer.
No. Yeah.
You wore it out?
I did, indeed.
Well, that's how you do it.
They're made to be worn.
Exactly. So now we're going to hear from our album of the week. This week it's All Hat by Joshua Headley. And Joshua Headley is a country musician and has dabbled with varying kinds of country over the years. And this is his love letter to Western swing, also known as country jazz. And the song we're going to hear is called Mean Mama Blues.
Lord, I hate to see that evening sun go down.
Oh, you're scared of the dark.
Yes, I do. Lord, I hate to see that evening sun go down. 'Cause I know that's when my woman gonna run all over town. But she told me that she loved me. There were no one but me.
Oh, they will talk, they will talk.
But she told me that she loved me. There were no one but me. Oh, but Lord, she got to stepping. Now I'm down in misery.
Oh, mercy.
Gonna leave that, yeah.
Gonna ease my worried mind.
Oh, low down.
From our album of the week, that was Joshua Headley with the album All Hat. That song was called Mean Mama Blues. Let us know what you think of the album of the week. Text us at 218-326-1234. You're tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingel here with DJ Dang.
Good morning. Support for this program comes from Sanford Health with primary care locations in Bemidji and across the upper Midwest. Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org. I'll let you know before Andrew speaks that he expressed a negative music opinion about an artist. I won't name the artist, and I won't say exactly what he said, but just in my own defense, I'm not the only person out there that is a very deep critical thinker about music and art.
I don't like The Who. There, I said it.
Oh, text us at 218-326-1234. Andrew DeZingel does not like The Who.
Like?
Baba O'Reilly?
That
my generation?
My generation I don't like because they did get old. So
doesn't it make you want to like knock over an old person or something? Or
no.
I mean, I'm old. Don't knock me over.
I'm 30 or 40 years old and I do not need this.
Text us at 218-326-1234. Andrew DeZingel does not like The Who. We'd love to hear from you. We'll read your text live on air. And
I do like the song Rain on Me. I like that song.
Did you like it when you saw how it was used in Quadrophenia, the movie?
Never seen Quadrophenia.
Oh.
I cannot imagine a movie I want to watch less than a Who rock opera.
That song is so beautiful in the movie, the way it's used. It's just, oh. So what I'm starting to hear now is you don't like young people.
Maybe. That's,
yeah.
Okay, let me throw
maybe.
This at you.
Text us at 218-326-1234.
For movies that were like based on albums turned into movies, is there any ones that you actually like besides Quadrophenia?
Well, I like Quadrophenia quite a bit.
Okay. But like, did you like The Wall?
No.
I don't think it's a good movie.
I don't think I ever actually saw it, so I shouldn't say no, but what other examples are there?
Hard Day's Night?
No.
Silly. I'm sure there's more.
Yeah, I can't think of
Monkey's
any off the top of my head.
Was that sort of that?
Who?
Monkey's movie Head.
Oh, yeah, that's genius. That
I've never seen
great.
It.
Great. Oh, Jack Nicholson doing all the crazy 60s things. Very, very, yeah, interesting movie. It's kind of the monkeys making fun of themselves. You know.
We receive support from Minnesota Power, an elite company powering the region's homes, businesses, and industries since 1923. Learn more about its vision of a carbon-free future at mnpower.com/energyforward.
Support for KAXE comes from Woodworks Homes, dedicated to the art of building in northern Minnesota by constructing handcrafted new homes and offering remodeling services. More at woodworksmn.com.
You are listening to 91.7 K A